This Israel Report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Well, it's that time of the morning where we cross to Anthony Reich in Israel. Anthony, if I can just start off by asking you, what's the latest in Israel in terms of the explosions in Iran? We're receiving breaking news that another big fire has broken out in another location. So whether it's exactly three places where there are explosions or whether it's more, the one thing we can confirm is it's multiple explosions. Israel saying it was not involved, but the latest word to come out of Iran is that Israel is involved. Can you tell us what you're noticing?
Yeah, Boker Tov, Chodesh Tov. Of course, we're into a new week and a new month, and lots of news. It's been a very busy weekend. Onto the issue of the explosions in Iran, long-time listeners will know that I do a little slot called Iran Check Your Mezuzahs. And I think that this is a great opportunity for the Iranians to go back to check their mezuzahs, because the explosion that we saw before the weekend was kind of reported like it was coincidental, like a work accident. It just kind of happened. Let's not forget that we're talking about stocks of ammonium perchlorate, which is highly inflammable, and of course located at that port area. And the initial reports didn't draw any link between the fire and Israel's potential involvement in this. It seemed like a work accident. Now that we're digging a little deeper and we've seen some CCTV footage come out from the explosions, and we understand a little bit more about what's going on, I think that there is certainly more than just an even chance that Israel may well have been involved in this. And it's certainly something that Israel would like to have been involved in if they'd been given the opportunity. So it looks a little bit like that massive explosion that took place in the Beirut port area a couple of years ago. That was blamed on Hezbollah stockpiling these inflammable materials in the port area, in a residential area. Many, many people were killed and injured. And that was all blamed on Hezbollah. And there was no implication or indication that Israel might have been involved in that particular one. But let's not forget that this ammonia perchlorate, which exploded, is exactly a material that's used for missile fuel. And we understand that it arrived from China not too long ago, and it was destined to help replenish the Iranian missile systems, many of which were used on those two attacks that took place against Israel a few months ago. So all of the circumstantial evidence certainly points a finger towards Israel having some sort of an interest to explode this. And the timing couldn't have been better in terms of the talks that are going on in the background between the United States and Iran to potentially replace the JCPOA, that agreement, the nuclear agreement that was in place. And President Trump saying that things are going well, which is exactly the sort of thing that the Israelis don't really want to know about or don't really want to hear, because the I think the desire of the Israeli government is to see the Iranian deal not actually happen and give Israel a pretext for potentially attacking Iran's nuclear development facilities. The timing couldn't be better to attack Iran. They seem to be at one of their lowest points in terms of the security and in terms of the support that they might get from outside. So it seems as if now is a great time to potentially attack Iran. And even though Israel is not saying anything about potentially being involved or not, and as you rightly point out, it now transpires that it seems as if though the fires were started in a number of different points at that port facility, which is more than just coincidental. I think that all indications are that this was something that was set up. And who else would have the interest to be involved in that? So we can all jump to our own conclusions.
Or the capabilities. I mean, we're hearing from an Iranian official by the name of Mohammad Sarraj, a member of the Iranian parliament, saying that this was not an accident. There are clear signs of Israeli involvement. He says they had precisely calculated the timing of the container's arrival at the port to cause the most damage. And we're also hearing from an Iranian Defense Ministry spokesperson saying that the explosions may be linked to the mishandling of solid fuel that was used for missiles. There he's suggesting potentially, like you said, that it could be like what happened in Beirut back in 2020. I was actually in Beirut at that time, and there was never any suggestion with the Beirut explosions that Israel was behind it. It was clearly understood almost from the beginning that it was a stockpiling. And interestingly enough, before we crossed to you, I was speaking to Dr. Mordechai Kedar, who's a political analyst in Israel, and he was saying the one difference between this incident and that incident in Beirut was that Beirut was one location. Here you have various places. He said that people were mocking Iran online. And as you correctly say, whether Israel's responsible or not, just the suggestion that Israel's behind it gives Israel quite a bit of credence and credibility. But it wasn't only the Iranian explosions that we've been monitoring. I wanted to ask you about Israel attacking targets in the Dahiya neighborhood of Beirut yesterday. What was that about?
Well, as listeners will be aware, there is a current ceasefire in place between Israel and Lebanon, or more specifically between Israel and Hezbollah. While Israel has continued to act, particularly in the southern part of Lebanon, to clear out any potential threats against Israel in that area, Israel has very selectively attacked targets in Beirut. It has attacked targets in Beirut since the ceasefire came into place, but it has been extremely cautious in carrying out such attacks and being very, very selective. Now, we understand what the Israeli government has said, and by the way, Israel has actually claimed responsibility for the attack that took place yesterday in Dahiya. Not only has it claimed responsibility, but listeners should be aware of the fact that there was a so-called knock on the roof, which means that the people in that Dahiya area of Beirut were actually warned to clear out, to get 300 meters away. There were very specific calls, and Avichai Adrahi, who's the famous Israeli Arabic spokesman and who sends out these evacuation messages in Arabic to make sure that as many civilians can be spared any consequences of the war as possible. So he sent out a very, very urgent message yesterday, asking people to move away from that neighborhood in Beirut. And the Israeli government has come out acknowledging that Israel was responsible and said that this was an urgent and important attack taking place because this was something that was a ticking bomb. It was an unusual threat. And it was an immediate threat to Israel's security. Exactly what that means, we don't really know. But we can tell you that three missiles were used to attack that particular site. There are differing views and differing reports about what exactly that site contained. But one can be pretty sure that this would have been on the Israeli security forces' radar. They know exactly what's going on there. They know exactly how to get in there. They warned civilians to get out of that area because, of course, it is in the central part of Beirut in a civilian area. And Israel said that Israel will continue to attack targets even in Dahiya, even in Beirut, even in civilian areas, if indeed they are threats that mean that Israel is immediately under some sort of a security threat. And Israel will not hesitate to carry that out. So this was something that was well planned, well organized. And as I say, civilians were moved out of the area right before the explosion took place. And some of the pictures that I've seen of the explosion, some of the videos that I've seen are quite impressive. It clearly was a very, very significant site. So this one Israel has claimed responsibility for, and the Lebanese president has come out criticizing Israel, not very vociferously. It's kind of almost like making sure that he's fulfilled his responsibility to criticize Israel. Really, not a great deal more than that. And to be honest, I think that the Lebanese government would be quite happy to get rid of any potential Hezbollah threats and weapons, because Hezbollah holding these kind of weapons represents a threat not only to Israel, but indeed to the safety of the Lebanese government, which was recently elected.
As you correctly say, the Lebanese presidency condemned the strike, but it also called on the US and France, who brokered the ceasefire back in November, to press Israel to cease its attacks on the country. And in a quote that I saw, in a quote that Israel leveled against the Lebanese government, it said the Lebanese government bears full responsibility for preventing these threats, and Israel will stand for the war's goal to return the residents of the north to their homes safely. Anthony, in your opinion, this ceasefire has been in place for, what, say 5 months. Do you think it's kind of accepted that the ceasefire is over, or do you think that there are still attempts to really try and hold on to some kind of ceasefire?
No, I don't. I think the ceasefire is far from over. I think that there is still a de facto ceasefire in place. I don't think that this is necessarily a sign that hostilities have reopened against Hezbollah and against Lebanon. And I don't think that Israel has any interest to reopen that particular front, not only because the Israeli forces are war weary and we need to try to rest our soldiers, and we've still got a job of work to do in Gaza, and we're still under threat from the Houthis, in spite of the fact that the Americans have spent the last couple of months attacking many, many Houthi targets in Yemen, and yet we still, from time to time, have to endure attacks from drones and from ballistic missiles that are being fired from Houthis from Yemen and from the Houthis. So Israel needs to pick and choose its fights, and I think that Hezbollah, for all intents and purposes, right now, is pretty much destroyed. At least the main heart of Hezbollah, the key threat that existed before this war began, has now been removed. And I don't think that Israel has a great deal to gain by continuing to wage war against Lebanon, against Hezbollah. What Israel really needs to do is exactly the sort of attack that it took place, that it carried out yesterday in Dahiya, and other attacks that it has undertaken in the southern Lebanon area, just to make sure that the main pinpoint threats are taken care of, and then to allow the Lebanese government to get on with it and to somehow clear out Hezbollah. Because I think that the Lebanese government and Israel right now are kind of almost working together with each other to try to clear out the Hezbollah threat. And to the extent that Israel might open up a war front against Lebanon and antagonize the Lebanese government, doesn't make sense for Israel's peace and security. So I think that the ceasefire is still very much in place. And I think that Israel will want to respect that while still maintaining the right to attack pinpoint threats, as we saw yesterday.
Another story, of course, that we've been following here is the war of words, or should I say the war of justice, that is transpiring between the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and the sacked chief of Israel's Shin Bet. And that, of course, is, I've just gone blank what his name is, but that's it, Ronen
exactly.
Bar. And it just seems to be a battle between the two of them. I mean, we heard yesterday the Israeli Prime Minister saying that Bar is directly responsible, massive and direct responsibility. And then we heard Bar responding, saying that the Prime Minister's statements are full of inaccuracies, biased quotes, and half-truths. What is the sense you get in Israel? Are people more on the side of Ronen Bar or more on the side of Benjamin Netanyahu?
It's a good question, and there are no easy answers to that question. And of course, when you say the sacked head of the Shin Bet, I mean, we use the word sacked with inverted commas, because even though he's sacked, he's still very much
Correct.
In place, and the courts at the moment are not allowing him to leave office, at least for the foreseeable future. But I think inevitably he will leave office. And he's actually said quite openly that he will leave office. But he seems determined not to leave office until at least a National Commission of Inquiry is set up to investigate what led to October the 7th. And at the moment, the war of words is exactly right. It's a case of he said, he said, and many accusations of lies being leveled. So let's just go back. Last week, I spoke to the listeners about Ronnie Barr's affidavit, and he essentially said that the Prime Minister. He leveled three main accusations against the Prime Minister. The first of which was that the Prime Minister expected Ronnie Barr, the head of the Shin Bet, to be loyal to the Prime Minister if the court decides something which might be against what the Prime Minister said. So, in the event that there is a clash between the order of the court and the order of the Prime Minister, then the Prime Minister expected Ronnie Barr to be loyal to the Prime Minister. That was the first thing that Ronnie Barr said. The second thing that he said was that the Prime Minister wanted to use the offices of the Shin Bet to investigate anti-government demonstrations and anti-government protest movements, and he felt that that wasn't okay. And the third thing that he said about the Prime Minister was that the Prime Minister tried to use the Shin Bet to excuse the Prime Minister from appearing at the court case hearings, which are currently investigating accusations of corruption against the Prime Minister. And those were the three main accusations that Ronnie Barr leveled against the Prime Minister. And I did explain to listeners that there is this law of the Shin Bet, which allows Ronnie Barr to do that. Now, very, very briefly, because we've run out of time, Ronnie Barr has come back, sorry, the Prime Minister has come back effectively, not necessarily addressing those three accusations, although he does say Ronnie Barr is lying. But the main accusation against Ronnie Barr is that the Shin Bet didn't warn the Prime Minister, and Ronnie Barr is personally responsible for not warning the Prime Minister about the pending October the 7th attacks. And the Prime Minister went into some detail, saying there was a security assessment at 5:15 in the morning on October the 7th, and the Prime Minister was not warned about that. So effectively, he's laying the blame of what happened on October the 7th at Ronnie Barr's feet and saying he was responsible because he didn't do his job properly. The rest is just lies.
And of course,
So that's really.
this is going to be the big question. It has always been the big question. Who's responsible for the failure of the Israeli government and army on October 7th? And
Well,
we'll continue to
yeah.
look into that. Unfortunately, we have run out of time, but Anthony Reich, the Israel correspondent, thank you for your insight. We'll be chatting with you tomorrow.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.